Blog Talk Radio.
This is G for Yourself. Now, here's Gio.
Hi, and welcome to G for Yourself. Great to have you with us, wherever you happen to be in the world at this moment. We champion the good chi toward helping you live a genuine life. Take a moment now and think about your eating habits, something you probably don't think about very much. Maybe you often eat when you're not really hungry, or you make comfort food your go-to sustenance, or you keep eating when you're just full. Science is telling us that our early social and emotional environment plays a role in developing unbalanced eating patterns. When we don't get good emotional nurturing in our early years, we're at big risk of relying on externals to get it. One of those externals can be food. Our guest today is a licensed psychotherapist and life coach with more than 20 years of experience in helping overeaters. Julie Simon is the author of When Food is Comfort, Nurture Yourself Mindfully, Rewire Your Brain, and End Emotional Eating. Julie, emotional eater is a label that might make us wince, even if emotional eating is what we do. For starters, what do we mean by emotional eating?
Well, that's a great question. And, you know, the reality is that we all enjoy eating, and we will sometimes eat when we're not hungry, or we'll overeat on occasion just because the food's so tasty or it enhances our personal or our social experiences. The problem really arises when we turn to food regularly when we're not hungry. We're choosing unhealthy comfort foods more often than we'd like. As you said earlier, we're eating beyond fullness. And something's out of balance somewhere. And it may mean that we are using food emotionally. So to give you an example of how you might know if you're an emotional eater, you might be using food as a tranquilizer to dull emotions that are difficult to cope with, such as anxiety, anger, sadness, frustration, hopelessness, shame, loneliness, and even happiness and joy and excitement. You might be using food to calm yourself when you're experiencing unpleasant bodily sensations, such as agitation, nervousness, muscle tension. You might be turning to food for soothing and comfort. Many people, of course, are using food for pleasure, escape, fulfillment, and excitement. You might eat when you're stressed out. You might be using food to silence negative, critical, self-defeating thoughts and quiet your mind. Perhaps you eat when you're feeling overwhelmed or paralyzed in terms of addressing your to-do list. Maybe you eat to distract yourself from low motivation states like boredom or lethargy or apathy. You might eat as a way to procrastinate. You might eat because your life is lacking purpose and meaning and passion and inspiration. And you might be trying to fill up an inner emptiness with food, because we all know that food is basically fuel and sustenance, you know, to give us energy. So if we're eating for any of these other reasons, there's a good chance that our eating has an emotional component to it.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, even though the stereotype of overeating is sitting in front of the television with a box of ding-dongs, it's not just sweet, sugary food. I mean, it could be any food, right? I mean, you can just be eating for the sake of eating.
Right. I mean, it certainly can be any food. I have people that, you know, I work with who, you know, are definitely sweet eaters in their, you know, emotional eating times. And I have others who don't even go for sweets. I mean, it really, you know, one client yesterday just said to me, you know, she was having kind of a bad day thinking about losses in her life. And then so instead of dealing with any of those emotions that were coming up, she thought about McDonald's, you know. So she went and she had a cheesy bacon burger and fries. Mm-hmm. And that kind of quieted the storm in her brain. But what we all know, if we just stop and think about it, is that, you know, when we're feeling sad, when we're feeling regret, loss, going to get a cheesy bacon burger doesn't really build much skill, right? So that we'll have to keep doing that whenever those emotions are surfacing if we don't have the skills to process through those emotions.
Mm-hmm. And your knowledge of overeating is not just professional, but it's personal too. You were an emotional eater. What was your experience like?
Well, you know, I spent a good portion of my life stuck in a cycle of overeating comfort foods and gaining weight and dieting, and I definitely ate emotionally. I was using food to calm and soothe myself. It helped numb the pain of unpleasant emotions and self-doubts. It altered my brain chemistry. And, you know, I always thought during my days of struggling with overeating and gaining weight and dieting, and I was, by the way, never good at sticking with diets. They always felt so restrictive to me. I always thought this doesn't make much sense that anybody should be struggling with their weight. It can't be that we're designed, however that is, to be overweight or underweight. Our animals in the wild aren't overweight. Our ancestors weren't overweight. So I didn't understand back then all the pieces of the overeating puzzle, but I knew that it didn't make much sense that I was struggling with this, and I knew that the answer couldn't be constant calorie counting, carbohydrate counting, fat gram, weighing and measuring my food, weighing and measuring my body. And that's what I was taught back then, that all this diet mentality, that this is the way I would maintain my weight, is I would watch every morsel that went in my mouth and count every gram and weigh and measure food. And it just seemed crazy to me. And so I was on a quest for many years to try and figure out all the pieces. And as I began to put the pieces into place, my life got so much better and the weight dropped away, and I began to understand that there were mind, body, and spirit imbalances that I needed to address that were leading me to turn to food. And when I had a pretty good handle on my overeating, I developed a 12-week emotional eating recovery program that was over 25 years ago. And my first book, The Emotional Eater's Repair Manual, is based on that 12-week program. We address the mind, the body, and the spirit imbalances that lead us to turn to food. In that book, I introduce the reader to the concept of developing an inner supportive voice, so that instead of just having an inner critic voice in our head that beats us up for overeating or gaining weight, or what I call the feeling self, the young part of ourselves that's having all those feelings and just wants what she wants when she wants it and wants that comfort now, we build another voice, an inner supportive voice, what I call the voice of the inner nurturer, that is there to help us get our needs met without having to turn to food. And that voice is there to love us and support us and comfort us. And most emotional eaters, what I discovered, because I didn't have that voice built in my head, and what I discovered over the years of the work I've done is that most emotional eaters didn't have that voice. They didn't have exposure, enough exposure to a kind, empathic, supportive, compassionate caregiver. Even if their caregivers were kind and loving, sometimes it was they just didn't get enough. Maybe there were a lot of kids in the house. Sometimes there just wasn't sufficient, consistent emotional nurturance to develop that voice. And so as I developed that voice, I realized I needed to teach other people how to develop that voice. And in my second book, my new book, When Food is Comfort, I help you understand how your brain got wired if you didn't get kind of enough consistent and sufficient emotional nurturance, how your brain got wired for kind of high reactivity. And your nervous system got wired for high reactivity. And this is why you grab those foods, you know, for comfort so quickly. And I teach a 7-skill mindfulness practice that will help you build that inner supportive voice and learn to regulate your nervous system and learn to manage your emotions. And the process, the really great news, is that by doing all that, you actually rewire your brain. And so it gets so much easier down the road. You know, you don't have to work these skills, you know, daily down the road. You'll have rewired your brain, and you'll stop your emotional eating, and you'll drop any excess weight effortlessly. So that's what the new book is about.
Mm-hmm. And neuroplasticity is part of what you write about, too. That's the rewiring process?
Yes. I mean, neuroplasticity is really this exciting concept that our brains, you know, we used to think that our brains were kind of set in stone and, you know, nothing could change. Mm-hmm. And what we now know is that our brains are really malleable. They're incredibly resilient and plastic organs. And we can continue to develop brain circuits throughout our lives. So when we haven't had that sufficient and consistent nurturance early in life, what happens is that we're under the influence more often than we'd probably like of an emotionally dominant part of our brain, and that's the more reactive part of the brain. And so some of those circuits haven't formed properly between that part of the brain, kind of the animal instinct part of the brain, and the self-soothing and self-regulating part of the brain, the upstairs brain, if you will, or the cortex. We need those connections to be working really well so that when we want to regulate our behaviors, we can easily access a part of ourselves, that self-soothing, self-regulating voice that says, yeah, I know that chocolate cake's looking really good, but, you know, we had too many sweets this week already, so let's pass. We can have it another time, but let's pass. We need to have access to a voice that helps us regulate that. And then if we feel like, oh, well, it doesn't feel like there's a lot of pleasure today, and I really do want that chocolate cake, and that voice can say, well, let me help you find some other pleasure that's not necessarily food. So we need to develop that circuitry, and that's what neuroplasticity has demonstrated, is that we can develop that circuitry at any point in our lives, and we can rewire our brains, and we can stop some of these wayward behaviors like emotional eating.
Do you have a suggested action or a meme or a process that can help us snag a thought in the moment and get us to a more positive place?
Well, in the book, I have a seven-skill practice, and it's kind of an elaborated practice off of a more simple practice I teach in my first book. In the first book, I talk about having an inner conversation. So whenever you want to grab food, you know, you came home from work, you had a difficult day, you're tired, or maybe you had an argument with your partner in the morning, and you're, you know, heading to work, and you're thinking about, you know, going and getting pastries, I ask you to stop, take a 10-minute pause, and just stop, and ask yourself, if you want to write it down, that can often be even more helpful, but you don't have to, ask yourself, what are you feeling, and take note of the emotions that you're feeling. So maybe you just had an argument with your partner before you left the house, and you have a little time before you head to work, and you're going to Starbucks, and now you're thinking that you're going to get two scones, you know, and you usually don't have that, but you're frustrated. Stop in the parking lot for a few minutes. Ask yourself, what am I feeling? So you notice, I'm feeling really frustrated. I'm feeling really angry. Yeah. I'm feeling really hurt. Notice what your bodily sensations are. My neck is tight. I'm clenching my jaws. I've got a little bit of a headache. I have a lot of muscle tension right now, okay? Research shows that just the act of paying attention, mindfulness, paying attention to your emotions and to your bodily sensations is calming in and of itself. So now you're starting to calm down a little bit. You're connecting to yourself. Emotional eating is all about disconnection. So now we're connecting to ourselves in a nourishing way. Find out what you're feeling. Ask yourself what you're really needing in this moment. This is a little three-step inner conversation process. What do you really need? Because you don't really need scones. What are you really needing? So you stop and you say, I guess confidence in myself, reassurance that my partner isn't leaving me, understanding. I need understanding. I need validation for my side of the story. I need some validation. So now you're getting clear on what you need, and you're knowing that scones are not going to validate you. You know, they're not going to bring you the understanding or the calming or the comfort that you're needing. Step number three in the three-step process called an inner conversation is bring in that inner nurture. Start developing that voice. That voice comes in and says, hi, I'm here with you right now in the parking lot of Starbucks, and I want to tell you how much I love you, and I care about you, and I'm sorry that you're going through this, and I'm sorry that you had an argument with him today. And I'm here to tell you that I get it. I understand what you feel. I understand what you were thinking. I understand what you were trying to say. So that's a very quick and easy little three-step process. It can circumvent the ordering of the scones, because now you're kind of realizing what you need, and it may not do it the first time. I always say to people, have your inner conversation, and then if you need to go get the scones, go get them anyway. But over time, as you practice, you will find that after you have your little inner conversation, that you're able to say, you know what, I don't need the scones or the coffee, I'm just going to head to work, right? And that's a little snippet of the more expansive set of skills I give in the second book, When Food is Comfort.
Our guest on this Chief for Yourself is Julie Simon, author of When Food is Comfort, Nurture Yourself Mindfully, Rewire Your Brain, and End Emotional Eating. I really like that you emphasize the inner conversation and the idea of mindfulness. That's a big word around here. I guess a meditation practice wouldn't hurt either.
Right, a meditation practice wouldn't hurt, but what I have found is that typically when people are grabbing comfort food, something's going on inside. There's either a storm or there's an emptiness. Something's going on inside, and most people are not going to meditate when they're feeling like that. That's my experience. They're either agitated or upset, or they're just feeling too empty or lonely. And I know during my emotional eating days, I didn't feel, those were not the times I felt like meditating. And I was meditating, but those were not the times I felt like meditating. So I think a practice of mindfulness, and that can be meditation if that works for you. It can be a meditation-like practice where you focus on your breath. And that can be very helpful when you're very agitated, is to just take a few minutes. I teach that in the book, that one of the techniques is, you know, we can just place our hand on our heart, place another hand on where you're having the most sensations, take a few deep breaths. We're really working on regulating that nervous system so that we can approach whatever the problem is or the situation is with more calm. So, and meditation is always good. I just don't think that most people are going to do that in the parking lot at Starbucks. But if you're willing to, I'd be happy for you to do it.
Without pointing any fingers, it seems that often there is, how can I put this delicately, a parental part of the emotional eating process. In your work, do you see a lot of evidence that points to parenting of overeaters?
I do, and, you know, like you, I never want to point the finger. I say in my book, you know, it's not about blame. We're not looking to blame our caregivers. But I do think that in the last, let's say, 60, 70-plus years, that parenting has become a different thing, and there's new and different stressors that parents have. And, you know, 50, 70, 80-plus years ago, children were raised more in villages. There were larger families, more extended families. Typically, extended families lived nearby. It wasn't like today where you have siblings and they're, you know, thousands of miles away, and your family's thousands of miles away or in other countries. So I think today parents, and in the past 50 to 70 years, parents are struggling with, you know, single parenthood. There's more distractions. And, you know, financial, emotional, all kinds of stressors that make it more difficult, I believe, for parents to properly nurture their children. And what research is now showing is that the nurturance that we receive, you know, in infancy and early childhood is critical to how the way the brain gets wired, how the structure of the brain is laid down, and also the chemistry of the brain. So I think that's part of why we're seeing more mood disorders and possibly more addiction because of this lack of sufficient nurturance. I say in the back of the book that I really think the obesity crisis is really a nurturance crisis of global proportion.
Talk to the person who makes a resolution every new year to lose weight and so often ends up frustrated by doing that.
Well, I think the reason most people end up frustrated by doing that is because they're thinking that an external fix will solve their problems. So most people are focused on diet, and even people who come to me, they're always talking about the foods they're eating and how they know they have to stop this food or that food and what eating plan they might go on. And, you know, 2/3 of adults in the U.S. are overweight. 80 million Americans are regular dieters. Most diet and weight loss books and programs offer quick advice, diet tips, and limited guidance. And they're basically attempting to apply external solutions to internal problems. So this is what happens every new year. People go through the holidays and they've packed on some weight, and, you know, especially through the darker days, shorter days, packed on some weight, and they want it off, understandably. They want to get a handle on their eating. They want the weight off. They want a quick fix. And while I say to people, you know, I'm not bothered if someone does a diet plan, you know, to jumpstart their motivation, that's ultimately, you know, the resolutions fail because it isn't ultimately about the food. It really ultimately is about being able to regulate your behavior and set limits with yourself and trust yourself. If you say, this is how I'm going to eat, and I'm only going to have dessert once or twice a week, or whatever your goal is, the question is, why can you not stick to your plan? What's getting in the way from you sticking to your plan? And typically, what's getting in the way is you're missing some skills. You're missing some skills, some self-care skills that are generally learned in childhood, and you can learn these skills. That's the good news. These skills are all learnable.
Is there a great difference between the eating problems of men and women?
I think men are emotional eaters just like women are emotional eaters. I think most men are not as open to seeing their problem as being emotional as women are. I think because women tend to be more in touch with their emotions. I say tend to because there are plenty of women that aren't. But I think because women tend to be more in touch with their emotions, the way we're wired, especially for childbirth and nurturing, we tend to be more in touch with our emotions. So I think women are more oriented towards the concept of emotional eating. But it's funny, I'll tell you, I wrote my first book, and all my case examples were women because predominantly that's who I've worked with, although plenty of men have worked with me and taken my program. Yeah. And I had men writing to me saying, I wish you included more men in your book. Men are emotional eaters too. And so I made sure in my second book that I wrote some cases about men because men are struggling with the same issue.
Yeah, I've known several guys like that, and I think you're right. They keep so many things to themselves, and they tend not to look for help, and that's the problem too. You're the founder of the 12-week emotional eating recovery program. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yes, as I said earlier, I founded that program over 25 years ago when I had some very good recovery under my belt, and I wanted to put together a program that was comprehensive, multidimensional and comprehensive, so that we would address, as I said before, the mind, the body, and the spirit imbalances. Mm-hmm. Because while we've spent today, you know, talking mainly about emotional eating, not all eating is emotional. Not all overeating or imbalanced eating is emotional. So some of the overeating that we do can be the result of body imbalances. Can be the result of hormonal imbalances, can be the result of brain chemistry imbalances. We talked a little bit about that. The cause can be related to not moving your body enough. It can be that you're not getting enough restorative sleep. That will all throw off the hormones. Can be related to the foods that you're eating. So, you know, putting nutrient-dense, unprocessed whole foods in our body is an important part of overeating recovery. So in the program, we cover the self-care skills, the emotional self-care skills that most emotional eaters are missing from childhood. Excuse me. We also cover the body imbalances that might be leading you to turn to food. And we also cover what I call soul care practices. This speaks to more of a spiritual hunger, a yearning for passion and inspiration and purpose and meaning. So we address that with soul care practices. We learn things like quieting our mind. We learn how to let go of attachments to persons, places, and things that no longer serve us. We work on bringing more nourishing connections into our life. We work on building more purpose, meaning, passion, and inspiration in our life. We learn about practicing gratitude on a daily basis. So the 12-week program is very comprehensive, and when I was going through my emotional eating challenges, I never found anyone who put all these pieces together for me. I went to alternative healthcare practitioners, and I went to therapists, and, you know, I went everywhere piecing together all the pieces of the overeating puzzle. And when I knew all the pieces, I thought, I want to put together a program where people can find all of those components rather than having to do what I did and kind of, you know, go to all different practitioners to pull it all together. Mm-hmm. So that's what the 12-week program is about. I ran it for many, many years just out of my office in Los Angeles. And when I wrote the first book, The Emotional Eater's Repair Manual, that book is based on the 12-week program, and I wrote that so that people all over the world could learn about the skills, principles, and practices that I was teaching. And also, then I developed the program in a tele-coaching format, so now people can join in from anywhere in the world, which is great.
Yeah.
And we'll be starting the program back up at the end of April.
What message do you want readers to take away from the book?
I really want readers to take away the message that recovery is possible. I know some people are of the belief that you're kind of always recovering from these things, that you're never fully recovered. I have a little different belief on that, especially from my own journey. I believe that we can be fully recovered, and I believe it's not only possible, but it's not that hard, that you can learn the skills, the principles, the practices that you need to follow to put an end to your emotional eating, your overeating, any weight challenges. You can put an end to all of that, and there's hope, there's recovery. I've been through it all. When people come and work with me in my 12-week program, I run the program myself so that, you know, people are really getting access to someone who's walked the talk. So I like to give people hope that it's really doable, and it doesn't matter what your age. I have people come to me who are 20, and I have people come to me who are 85, and they say, I'm still turning to food, and I want to stop doing this before I take my last breath.
Where would we find your website?
My website is www.overeatingrecovery.com, and for anybody wanting to get started right away, you can download 2 free chapters from either of my books, and you can start reading and see if my approach resonates with you. And you can also sign up. I write a monthly blog. You can sign up for my blog articles.
Yeah, and I would suggest reading the blog, too. Some very supportive stuff in that direction as well. The book is When Food is Comfort, Nurture Yourself Mindfully, Rewire Your Brain, and End Emotional Eating, from our guest, Julie Simon. Julie, thanks for doing the interview and for a book that gives us an understanding of emotional eating and some great tools to deal with it. So please come back and talk with us again.
I will. Thank you so much for having me, John.
We'll have a link to Julie Simon's website at cheeforyourself.com. The homepage or start page of cheeforyourself.com is where you can hear our interviews as they're being recorded. After the recording, the interview is edited and then put into a downloadable audio file, and you can access those at a number of hosting sites. Now, the best way to find out who's going to be on and when is through Genuline's blog posts. When you're on the cheeforyourself.com start page, look for that small box at the top of the page. Put your email address into it, and you'll get updated information on who's going to be on and when. Pretty simple, and your information will not be sold to any other party. That is about all for today. Thanks for being with us and for being with us on all of the shows of the past 10 years. Thanks, too, for the likes and follows. Always appreciated. Be well, and I'll talk to you soon.